kind of tried to make the space a little dark to remind us of the darkness. And so I thought I'd just take a nice comfy seat. As peaceful, create as peaceful a presence as I know how to create. We don't have a fireplace. I was hoping for that. But we have some fire and a Christmas tree. But last week we talked about the light shining in the darkness and the darkness not overcoming it. In the midst of the darkness that at times can overwhelm us, we hold on to the hope, the same hope that the nation of Israel held on to as they waited in the silence, that God is still at work, even though there's times we can't see it and feel it. We're invited as His people to let the light of hope shine for others to see. And second week of Advent, the second week of waiting, we find ourselves reflecting on peace. And to the Jewish people, the people that Jesus was born into, there was a word that they used that we normally translate as peace. Does anyone know what that word was? Shalom. Yeah. Shalom. They waited and longed for shalom to come. But this idea of shalom, which we translate as peace, it actually means a whole lot more. It's much more deep and profound. It's almost hard for us to capture. But one Jewish scholar speaks about shalom this way. It should come up on the screen. It says, the Hebrew word for peace or shalom, it's derived from a root denoting wholeness or completeness. And its frame of reference throughout Jewish literature is bound up with the notion of shelamut, or perfection. Its significance is thus not limited to political domain, to the absence of war and enmity, or to the social, to the absence of quarrel and strife. It ranges over several spheres and can refer in different contexts to bounteous physical conditions, to a moral value, and ultimately to a cosmic principle and a divine attribute. So shalom, it's way more than just what we usually talk about when we use the word peace. It's something that flows from the heart of God, and it's the rightness that God intends for all of His creation. He intends for this world. It's what God began to reinstitute through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and his people, something that had been broken in Eden. When we think about the Garden of Eden, it wasn't just sin happened. It was that shalom, the rightness of the world, was broken in that time. But before we get to talking about Israel waiting for their Messiah and longing for the shalom, we have to understand more of their story. God came to Abraham, their ancestor, and He promised them that a great nation was going to come from him. And when we talk about nation, certain things pop into our head. But in that time, nation was more about a people than it was about a country. From the very beginning, it was clear that the idea of nation was different than what we think of when we think of nation-state. Israel was supposed to be a called-out people of God who lived together in a way that blessed each other and blessed other nations through how they lived. That's at the heart of God's call to Abraham. In Genesis 12, let's just remind ourselves of what God's promise and call to Abraham was. He says, I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who curse you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. But again, that word nation, it's about being a people, not a country. And this people was going to receive God's blessing and pass it forward so that others would be blessed. All the peoples of the world, of the earth, will be blessed. At the heart of God's shalom for His people in Israel, from the very beginning, there was the restoration of the brokenness in Genesis 1. And if you go back, Genesis 2 and 3, actually. But if you go back in the beginning of Genesis, you see the brokenness that comes in. And we've talked about that here before. But the brokenness between God and man. The brokenness between people. The brokenness between humanity and the world that we live in, the earth that we live on, and then even the brokenness that we feel in ourselves. and the very beginning of God, the sort of rescue plan that God's putting into place here with Abraham, that's what he's longing to put back together. That this people that he's establishing through Abraham would be reconnected with the God of the universe. That they would be able to live together in ways that there was a healthy reconnection with other people. That they would have a healthy way of living in the world, living on the earth. And you get later on, you see there's some really practical instructions for how to care for the earth well. And that they would discover in themselves a wholeness. In the early days, the idea of being a people wasn't really that complicated for them. Not that they did it perfectly, but it wasn't that complicated because it was basically just being a family. It was Abraham and eventually his son, and then his son and spouse and a couple of kids, and then the grandchildren, and it wasn't a massive number of people. And so in some ways, it was just, how do we figure out how to live this like a family? A really complicated or really messed up family at some points, but that was the goal. How do we live this as a family? That was true right up through the time when Jacob and his sons ended up in Egypt because of the famine. And in that time, that's when the people became a very, very large extended family. But even while they were there, they were basically governed by Egyptian law. They were kind of controlled in how they, eventually, very literally, very controlled in how they lived their lives as slaves. As the Jewish people moved through their existence, things needed to change. When they were free from slavery, there were a large number of people. They couldn't just figure out what it meant to live as God's people as a family anymore. They were too big for that. And so they things began to be introduced into their life that they began to link with this idea of shalom or peace. And they became expectations for Israel of what peace must look like. So as they're led out of Egypt by Moses, they needed some help figuring out how to live as extended people of God now that they didn't have the Egyptian rules, the Egyptian law. And so God gave to them some guidelines that actually took a shape that wasn't that unlike what they'd had in Egypt. He gave them a law. Said, here's how I want you to live together as your people, or as my people. Those guidelines were given to them in a form, in a way that they could understand in their time. Next, they needed a place to live. So they gained the land the way every other nation in that time, every other people, they took it by force, and they had a land. Now, once they had the law and they had the land, God worked with them to rule them through judges and through prophets, and they still looked very different than the other nations. And so they looked around and said, but everybody else has a king. We want a king too. And basically after pestering the prophets and judges and pestering God for long enough, God said, okay, I'll give you a king. Because they wanted to be just like everyone else. At that point, they had the law like everybody else. They had land like everybody else. And now they had the king like everybody else. And there really wasn't that much uniqueness in them anymore. But there was still one thing that was unique. They had a tabernacle. The presence of God that dwelled among them was in this tent. And over time, the king said, "What? All the other gods, they don't have a tent. We need something more than that, too. We want to build a temple." And so God says, okay, but not you. Your son can do it. And they build this temple. And they end up looking like everybody else. With the law, the land, the king, and the temple. And Israel began to look at those things and say, this is at the heart of God's promise to us. This is at the heart of the shalom he wants for us. If we can have our law, our land, our king, and our temple, then everything will be right with the world. Forgetting that it was actually hundreds of years before any of those things came into existence that God offered them his shalom. But what ended up happening was they despite having those things, actually, maybe because they had those things, they began to take their connection with God for granted. And they thought, well, as long as we have the temple and the law and the kings and all these things, then we can basically do what we want. And they lost the heart of the peace that God really wanted for them as his people. They didn't protect the land. They abused relationships with each other. They ignored the law. Actually, they actually lost the law. Like, physically lost the law. They didn't have any copies of it for generations of people. And eventually, the line of kings was eliminated. The temple was destroyed. And they lost the law. They lost the land. They lost the kings. They lost the temple. And they looked around and said, we lost it all. We don't have any peace anymore. They equated those things with the peace of God. Even though, again, for hundreds of years before they had those things, God had still offered them his peace. It was at that time when they were without those symbols that God made them a promise that a Messiah was going to come into the world. The Messiah was going to come and bring peace. The Messiah was going to come and bring the shalom they longed for. And so they were waiting for peace. And that is who we try and resonate with this morning. These people that are waiting for peace. Now, Israel understood that as someone who was going to bring back these symbols of peace. The law was really a symbol of how God wanted people to be in relationship with him and each other. The land, the king, that they would be under right rule. The temple, the sign of God's presence. As they waited, they thought this Messiah is going to come and he's going to help us to reestablish the law and live that out well. He's going to give us back our lands, that we'll be free in it. He's going to reestablish David's line of kings, and he's going to rebuild this temple to be all that it was supposed to be in the beginning. And that's when we'll know shalom has come. That's when we know we'll have peace again. I think many Christians today can relate to that posture of waiting. This isn't all of us, but in a lot of Christian messages, you hear things like, if we can just get everyone living right again, then everything's going to be okay. We need just moral conformity. And that's the problem in the world, and that will bring us peace if we can do that. Or, you know, if we can just get our nation to be more Christian again, then everything's going to be okay. Then we'll all have peace. Israel wanted a king to be just like the other nations. They wanted to fit in. And there are some Christian, I can't count the number of times I've heard the term relevance thrown around in Christian circles, where if we can just look and act and talk like everyone else, then they'll connect with us, and then we'll be able to connect with other people in the world, and everything will be okay. We'll have peace as we engage our world. Israel looked towards the rebuilding of a temple as the sign of God's presence. And we think if we can just, you know, build a better building or have programs that's going to give us peace. But Jesus, the Messiah, was coming to bring something so much more than a law and a land and a king and a temple. He was coming to help people recover a true connection with their God. To recover a true face-to-face connection with people where relationships have been broken. To recover a way of living in the world that went beyond just labels of like the Christian label or the idea of a Christian nation. And he's definitely coming back to build something more than just buildings and programs. Jesus came to those people who were longing for law, and he invited them into love. He He actually was breaking the law that they so deeply cherished to invite them in to love. He came to those who were longing for a land, and he came to them as a man who had no place to lay his head. He came to those longing for a king and showed them how to get on his hands and knees and wash people's feet. He came to people longing for a temple, and instead said, "You're the body. You are the temple." And he gave them the Holy Spirit to dwell in them. Jesus came reestablishing a nation of God, but not as a country, as a people. The people that was actually the original intent so many years before. A people that can't be bound by any border, any language, or any skin color. The shalom he came to offer broke down barriers and didn't put up walls. You know, right living, living well, having a safe place to live, having good rule and order, having a space that we can gather as God's people, they aren't bad things, but they aren't the ultimate thing. They're really just symbols of God's graciousness and generosity to us. They aren't at the heart of God's peace. I'd like you to read this Jesus' words together with me. "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid." Jesus came to give us a peace that is different than the kinds of peace that the world offers. Something deeper, something more. Law, land, kings, and temple, they can all be destroyed. The gift of Emmanuel, of God with us, is something that can't be taken away. So what about those symbols? What about those things? I think the physical things in the world still very much have their place. For Israel, the law and the land and the kings and the temple, they were all ways in which God was trying to embody the bigger peace that he was inviting them into. It was ways that it got embodied in their world, in their environment, in their context. And one of the things that we are challenged to do, invited to do, is to figure out how the peace of God, this deeper peace that he invites us to, works itself out on the ground, in the world that we live in. And so a gathering like this, a building like this, it's not bad. It can be part of how God works out his peace in the world. But we can't confuse the physical outworking with the deeper reality. Paul talks about working out of salvation. I think that's a part of it. How does this peace work itself out in the world that we live? What are we to do today to remind us of the greater peace that Jesus invites us into and to share that with others, to help others get glimpses of it so that they can be invited into the deeper peace? You know, every time we pray, "Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven," that's really the kind, that's what we're entering into. How can we bring this peace to bear in this world so that people can see glimpses of it and hopefully be invited into the full depth of it? We're supposed to live this out in a way that's a blessing to others. To help us consider how to do that, I'm actually going to invite a couple of people to come up. And we're going to share in a way about a way that this church, this congregation, has sought to show that peace. This is in a physical, tangible way. It's not the deepest level, but it was a glimpse of how we can extend this peace to those who desperately needed it. So Sean and Andrew are going to come and share.
there's a verse in Leviticus that says this. When a foreigner resides among you in your land, do not mistreat them. The foreigner residing among you must be treated as a native born. Love them as yourself.
We want to tell you a story about peace coming to a family's life.
I am Alex.
Hello.
Hello, I am
Mom.
Thank you, Sarah.
Hello, I am Lan.
Men, I want you to imagine you're a father. Imagine you're at home, a nice home, with your beautiful wife and two kids. Your firstborn is a boy, and you're proud. Your second child is a beautiful girl, and you love her so much. Life is good, and you are at peace. You work each day to provide for your family. You love them. You do what you need to. Your wife stays home and looks after the kids and provides a home for you. You pray to God, thanks for this life.
And women, imagine with me, you're a mom. You have a son and you have a daughter, and you love them more than you ever thought was possible. You feel fortunate to spend your days staying at home to care for them and care for your family home. Your siblings and your mother even live nearby, and you see them often and you talk to them every day. Your family is safe and they're happy, and you absolutely love the city you live in.
One day, unrest breaks out where you live, and you start to wonder, can I keep my family safe? You and your family carry on with life, trying to keep it as normal as possible. You start to worry. Eventually, their unrest turns to war. You worry a little more. What will happen to my family? Can I keep them safe? War gets closer. Your sense of peace is broken. You worry more. Finally, war is at your doorstep. You have to flee. Your family is in danger. You take them to a place that feels safe, and you feel better. You go back to your home, where your life was good, to collect some things. You find that it has been bombed. Your heart is broken. The things you worked for are gone, but your family is safe. What will you do? How will you provide for your family? You sell shoes for a living. Shoes are no one's priority when war is all around. You worry.
The rumors of war have become reality, and you know that you and your family are in imminent danger. As a mom, how does that feel? Your mom lives outside the city, up in the mountains, and you know it's still safe there. So you pack what you can, and you go. You try to settle into life there and give your children some stability. Your husband returns to the city and sees firsthand that the home and the life that you've left behind is in ruins. Your heart is broken.
After some time in your new home, war gets closer again. You wonder what to do next. You decide to flee to a neighboring country, leaving all that you know behind, not knowing what to expect, not knowing what to happen next. You continue to worry.
The war and violence is all around you and your family again. You see all the damage and destruction everywhere. You know people who have died as a result of the attacks, and each day you worry that one of your family members might be next. You feel very scared, but you try not to let your children see your fear. Your children can no longer go to school because it's just too dangerous. Other children have actually lost their lives traveling on the bus to and from school. You thought you had moved far enough away from the war, but it's on your doorstep again. Although the thought of leaving your mother and siblings makes you feel sick to your stomach, especially during a time like this, you want your children to be able to go to school and have a future. You want them to be safe again. You and your husband decide to flee to a nearby country. There you will be able to register as refugees and wait until a time comes to travel to another country and try to make a future there for yourself. Your kids have a lot of questions, and you don't have a lot of answers. Can you imagine that worry as a mom? Or the questions that would even flood your mind? Can you imagine holding your kids and trying to reassure them when you don't even know if everything's going to be all right?
During this struggle, you've worried. You've struggled. You have a stroke. Now you have very limited ability to care for your family. There is no peace. You feel failure. You have no hope. You have to depend on others to provide for your family. Luckily, your wife has two brothers who are willing to step up and provide help.
You've lived through the realities of a horrible civil war, and you find yourself in a new country. You see the effects of the violence and unrest, even in your own children and your own family. But you just want to move forward and find a better life for your children. Then your husband has a stroke. On top of everything else, he's in the hospital, and he's no longer able to provide for your family. Things have to change. You feel alone and completely overwhelmed. You just want peace for your family and just for your own heart even.
You live in this new country until you hear of a place that will help. Canada. What is this Canada? What is it like there? Will they help me? What am I to expect? You worry. There is no peace. Despite all the questions, you sense that there is peace there. You talk with your family. You say, let's go there. Let's go to Canada. There will be hope there. There will be peace.
You try to make the best of the new country while you wait for your refugee profile to be processed. Your children start to go to school that's run by an organization that helps displaced families. Your brothers work to support your family, and you also get a job working for a humanitarian organization. You do whatever is needed. You spend your days going to care for other displaced families, and your heart aches for those parents and those children, because they're also suffering due to the war. You long for peace, for them as well. You learn that your profile has been accepted, and your family is going to be going to Canada. You don't know much about the country or the people who live there, but you know that your children will be able to get a good education, and they will be safe.
You make plans to travel, but you have to wait, never knowing until the last minute. Then you get called to go. You gather your family and board a plane. You wave goodbye to your brothers-in-law that helped you. You believe that they will follow you soon. You're anxious, excited, scared, worried, but you have hope.
You pack what belongings you still have into your suitcases, and you prepare for a really long trip to Canada. Your kids are excited. You're all excited. But you can also tell your kids are scared. You and your husband are nervous, but you know that this is something you need to do for the sake of the future for your kids.
You land in your new country. What next? Where are we going? You meet some people. They seem nice. They say, come with us to your new home. You don't understand the language, the customs. Imagine your anxiety. Imagine your fear. Where is this peace that you sought?
The plane ride was really long, and you're really tired when you get to the airport in Toronto. It's really cold outside. And you notice that there's not as many women wearing hijabs or head coverings. You know you're really far away from home. And you also realize quickly that the little bit of English you had in school is not really going to cut it here. And you're going to spend a lot of time not understanding what people are saying. A small group of people come, and they pick you up. And they take you to what's going to be your new home.
You finally get to your new home. It's cold outside. There's snow everywhere. Excitement is in your family. So is fear. But there is hope. And peace comes back to your heart.
Ladies, I don't know, but can you imagine walking into a house, opening that door to your new home, and seeing what looks like an actual home? There are 3 bedrooms. There's a kitchen stocked with food. And even familiar foods that you would find back home. And all the items that you need to cook and eat are there. There are even pictures on the wall and flowers growing in pots in your living room. And it's obvious that people have been expecting you. And they've been working to give you a comfortable place to live. You feel welcomed and comfortable and finally at peace.
Our new life is about to start. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Matthew 25:25-36.
So they came here seeking peace and comfort. And this is not about us as a community, but as a community, you work together, and you, whether you donated money, your time, whether you prayed for them or offered them a smile, even friendship, whether you showed them kindness, whether you drove them here or there, whether you took them to medical appointment, you extended God's peace to them and the comfort that they needed, that they desperately needed. They're not fully there yet. There's a long road ahead. But the bombs have stopped falling around them. They are safe. They have lots of challenges ahead of them. Language and culture, teenagers and family stuff. Just assimilation to this culture as well is holding on to some of their own cultures and traditions. But they have peace. And there's hope.
Thanks for everybody helping and out for Canada.
I like to be in the community and I'm here in the market in the subject.
I like Canada. I like yourself and thank my study and everything. And I do very well at school. Everyone knows me. I like go to school and I like St. Peter's because there is a school in here. And I went for ground school, Niagara Falls, they call them class in here. I still need not a language, but I am not very good because I go smart. And thank you.
Thank you for meeting me. I'm going to be in Lynn. Hi! I like school and I like my friends and I like to play basketball. Thanks for helping me and thanks for watching.
Hi, I love Canada.